I'm Macy Chen.
And I'm David Ball.
You're listening to CFRO, The Pulse, here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
We are your independent daily news show, reporting on the front lines in our community.
And we're streaming at thepulse.coopradio.org.
Good morning. It is Monday, November the 23rd. And on The Pulse today, we're going to be looking in depth at how many cases of COVID-19 there are in the downtown east side after months of saying that the neighborhood has seemingly dodged the crisis despite the worst fears. In fact, on top of the opioid epidemic at record levels, there are now proof that the number of COVID cases is the highest in the province per capita. We'll talk to Jens van Bergman after our news today. In our top story, 2 weeks after the province brought in severe restrictions on the number of people that people can see in the Fraser Health and Vancouver and surrounding health area, the numbers have turned downward for the first time of new cases. Starting on Thursday, there were now 641 new cases on average over the last 7 days. Previous to that, it was as high as 664 on the 7-day average. But even at the current numbers, it's still double what it was on October the 21st. A month ago, and 5 times higher than it was on August the 31st, almost 3 months ago. After months of seeing very few COVID-19 cases reported, but struggles to get data out of the provincial government about the downtown east side, where poverty, lower life expectancy, and the risk of other illnesses, the neighborhood is now seeing one of the highest COVID rates per capita in the province. Here's Jens van Bergman, a mathematician.
Even in August, the Vancouver Center North, so that's the area where the local health area where the downtown east side is in, it was already the second highest per capita cases in Metro Vancouver. So that's in August. In September, it was by far the highest. And in October, then it is just below Surrey, already about over 400 cases per 100,000 population, which is roughly where Surrey was at in October. Of course, it's going to be much higher in November.
And that was Jens van Bergman. But data is still missing on such a local level.
We see these are generally low-income areas, but is it just the low-income people in this area? Or is it something else that's driving us to really get to the bottom of this? We need to collect individual-level data on income and on ethnicity.
You can hear his full interview after the news today. And the new COVID numbers have caused the province to institute a mask requirement across the province, as well as visitor restrictions everywhere, not just in Vancouver and Fraser Valley. Masks must be worn in any indoor public space. They were already mandatory, but seldom enforced on transit. Now, any store must maintain a mask requirement. The government recommends that you find a 3-layer mask, if possible, and avoid things like fleece and handkerchiefs, which do not protect against the virus. Here's Dr. Bonnie Henry.
As we know, we have seen a significant rise in new cases, hospitalizations, and tragically, deaths. I'm ordering that there'll be no social gatherings of any size with anyone other than your immediate household. This applies in our homes, vacation rentals, and in the community, and in public venues, including those with less than 50 people in controlled settings. Your immediate household can, of course, include roommates, and if you live on your own, you can visit with up to 1 or 2 people if you regularly spend time with them. I have, for many, many weeks, made clear the importance of wearing masks, particularly now, as one of the measures that we have that can prevent transmission, along with those important things that we know work, like physical distancing, cleaning our hands, and staying away from others when we're not feeling well. But based on continued requests, particularly from the retail and other public sectors, to have more explicit direction for the use of masks in indoor, public, and retail spaces, I've asked the Minister of Public Safety and the Solicitor General to issue a requirement for the wearing of masks for all indoor, public, and retail spaces for staff and customers, except where eating or drinking.
And that's our news headlines. Welcome back. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO 100.5 FM and online at thepulse.cooperadio.org, where you can find all of our previous interviews and shows, or download us wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm David Ball with Vancouver Cooperative Radio. On today's show, we're looking at a dramatic surge of COVID-19 cases reported in the downtown Eastside, Grandview, Woodland, and Strathcona. They happen to be the three poorest areas in the entire province. And after months of saying that there was very little COVID transmission there, despite fears to the contrary, and now the data show that, in fact, the numbers are among the highest in the entire province. Today, we're talking with Jens von Bergmann. He's a mathematician, has a PhD in math and degrees in physics and computer science, and taught at the University of Calgary, University of Notre Dame, and Michigan State University. He now does digital analysis and visualization with Mountain Math at mountainmath.ca. Here's Jens von Bergmann. Hi, Jens. It's great to have you on Co-op Radio's The Pulse today.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's your first time on our program, so welcome aboard. Well, I know that some of our listeners probably eyes glaze over when they hear the word data, so I really am glad that you're here today. Thanks so much for coming to help break it down in regular people's terms. So COVID-19 is obviously something that we've been watching so closely in the downtown East Side and East Vancouver. And until around September, we're told repeatedly that there was no major outbreak or a cluster there, despite the worst projections. That started to change in September, I understand.
Well, it actually, so I'd have to look exactly at the data again, but it did start fairly early. So basically, from the time that we do have data, the downtown East Side local health area had fairly high levels already. So it was the second highest and or highest in Metro Vancouver area for the last 3 months that we have released data. So that is for October, September, and August. So all of these, it was already quite high.
And that matches with, we talked to an infectious disease expert who said he found hundreds of cases of antibodies present that showed people had already had it. Didn't mean they were immune. It meant that they at some point had COVID before. This is back in July.
Okay, so that was that localized for the downtown East Side? So I don't know about that.
Yes, it was a small sample, so he couldn't make conclusive data out of it, but he was surprised that there was multiple hundreds of people showed up in their small sample just in homeless shelters, essentially.
Yes, so that seems to square reasonably well. The other issue, of course, with the data that we have is that the data for those local health areas that we've been using, so they come from monthly maps published by the BC CDC. So it requires hand transcribing that data and then subtracting the difference between 2 months and looking at and computing the rates of per population.
So I understand you actually had to manually do this? Like they don't give you a chart, like a table with the numbers?
No, there's no table, right? So you have to manually do this. This is a fairly typical thing that we've seen in BC with COVID data. There's lots of journalists, lots of other people that manually transcribe this data because it's not being made available.
That's insane to me. So you, how do you go back to earlier months?
That's right. So the web archive is really an important tool in this whole setup. Which stores old web pages, so you can go back in there and then try to reconstruct the data from the old scrape. So there's, yeah, so you go to the, you find the current web page, then you paste it into the archive web page, then you go back to when you think it was posted in a previous version, and then you hope that there's a high enough image quality that they scrape to, because they don't always scrape the images, to actually get this data.
Wow. I mean, that for a life and death situation in which we're all supposed to be monitoring and careful and knowing where the risks are, this is astounding to me, even as someone who's been complaining about the lack of even citywide data for months.
Yeah, right. So if we're looking at this, so even in August, the Vancouver Center North, so that's the area where the local health area where the downtown East Side is in, it was already the second highest per capita cases in Metro Vancouver. So that's in August. In September, it was by far the highest. And in October, then it is just below Surrey.
And Surrey, of course, has seen extreme exponential growth. You can see from some of the charts, it's gone very, very fast.
Yeah. Although in the September numbers, it was already that high in Vancouver Center North, already about 400 in the whole month, over 400 cases per 100,000 population, which is roughly where Siri was at in October. Of course, it's going to be much higher in November too. Again, one would guess. It's hard to say without, you know, actually having these numbers. We only get monthly updates, unfortunately. And on top of that, there's a further complication that especially Vancouver Coastal Health is lacking quite a bit of geographic information in their data. So this is not even counting all cases.
Is this a matter that they are not just sharing it? They don't think we need to have this data? Or is it a matter that they may not even be collecting it?
And no, I believe they are collecting it. There might be, of course, a suspicion that, especially in the homeless population, it's difficult to collect. So there may be some cases like this. But overall, in Vancouver Coastal, we've seen like they typically lag behind a day or two with getting complete data, even on things like age structure up on the data portal. And so from what I can tell from the outside, they seem to have a lot of trouble just keep collecting their data. It's not like Vancouver Coastal has that many cases. It's just they don't seem to have this as a top priority. And you can see large variances in the case counts that they put out when they put more localized data versus the overall count.
So before we get kind of into the data transparency issue, let's go back to the numbers for this particular health district that includes, I understand, the downtown east side, also Strathcona and Grandview.
Right. So the region, roughly includes those areas. That's right.
And so what do you take away from this when you look at, other than the fact that it's among the worst in the province, what else would you sort of note about the data here, or what patterns might be?
I think to me, one of the issues is that if we look around the country or around the world, typically we get a lot more localized data for COVID cases than we do in BC. So in Toronto, for example, you get it for each city neighborhood. You get separate COVID numbers, and they're updated very regularly. Here in BC, we don't. We own, like, to get to a neighborhood level, and like you said, this one includes three neighborhoods. We have to wait every month for an update. And even then, the data is not really available, and I don't think people are really paying attention to this. So we can't start interventions where maybe the city will say, hey, for the city of Vancouver, this particular health area is really dominating our cases, and we need some intervention, some relief for the people that are there, and we can't do this. In the beginning, you said that maybe in September it wasn't so bad in August. It was, actually. It's just I don't think we've been paying attention. So if you look at the numbers, this particular local health delivery area was already the second worst in August. The second worst in Metro Vancouver.
But there was no major announcement or change of rules like we saw with Surrey around Halloween.
No, and in September, it was just by far the worst in the entire region. It's like the next one is maybe half as bad.
Wow. What are some of the big correlates we would find in the data, like around income and age and that kind of thing?
Well, we're not collecting this, right? So we're collecting age information, but it's not being published at this level. At the geography level, they only publish the counts for those. We do not collect income information. We don't collect ethnicity or other data.
Or even what kind of jobs people are working. Like in Ontario and in other countries, we can see which jobs, for instance, have the highest COVID rates.
So the jobs we are collecting, the BC government or the BC CDC has stopped sharing that data, even with the Public Health Agency of Canada. So we don't have a complete picture on, for example, jobs in just countrywide. Even the Public Health Agency of Canada doesn't have that because BC CDC made the decision to stop sharing that data.
Why is that significant as you see it?
Well, in many ways, if we wanted to look at how we can protect people, how we can fine-tune our regulations to be more effective, we need a lot of this kind of information. So the information that was sent, that is collected on the National Case Report form, looks in particular at healthcare workers. It looks at teachers and in school transmissions. And these things, we just don't have that data anymore for BC because BC stopped sharing it. We don't know what's going on outside. Like some people at the BC CDC probably know. if they're looking at it, but the transparency is lost and we can't paint. So for researchers that want to look at a national picture, they can't because it doesn't include BC.
Do you think this is a matter of them kind of saying, just trust us, we know how to target and analyze the data, and there's no need for the public to know this? How could you help, for instance?
I think that's part of their rationale. Of course, it is also effectively making it impossible to paint a coherent picture across the country for anybody. So it's not just about BC here. We are all in this together, and BC is blocking countrywide analysis on this by not even sharing with the Public Health Agency of Canada. So it's not about just sharing with the public, right? So it goes beyond that.
I find that astounding.
I do too, yes.
The other thing is we're expected to kind of take on faith as well that there's no risk of sending kids to school and that it's okay still to go to restaurants. But if we're not collecting the actual job data, work site data, that would actually...
We are collecting this.
I see. Well, we don't know it.
Then we're just not sharing it. So jobs, I believe we're also collecting data on settings. So there's some data that has come out that is sort of, it's not a comprehensive picture, but we've seen in some of the modeling updates or in some of the other BCDC reports, you can find charts occasionally about, there was one about hospital or healthcare workers where they broke things down recently after there was a lot of talk about this. There has been one about exposure settings, although I'm pretty sure that graph only includes cases that they actually did manage to contact trace, and it didn't have a reference about how many cases there were that they couldn't trace.
Okay, so this is that bar chart that is kind of infamous because journalists asked for the data behind the chart and they said that was all that was available. And so I understand you actually used some creative tools to analyze this chart and break it down into numbers just from the chart itself.
Yeah, so I have a very strong aversion from scraping data by hand when I think the government should make this available.
I mean, you think that a 10-year-old could do that if it's just a bunch of numbers in a chart.
And my 10-year-old actually went and he negotiated an ice cream, two ice creams actually, to scrape that data out. So there's some web tools that I showed him. Essentially, you can think of this as a digital ruler, like he would maybe measure distances on Google Maps. But this is just for a chart. So you plug the chart in there and you basically tell it where the y-axis is and calibrate the height, and then you go and set and basically manually put these points in where all these different levels of the bar chart are, and you paste it over into a Google Doc, and then you turn the image into data, and then we can actually look at it and slice it in different ways and derive some insight from that.
So what was this chart exactly? This was the settings chart? What does that mean?
Right. So the idea here is that when we have a confirmed case, what we want to know is how did this person or where did this person contract the COVID? So, of course, this is a bit of a guessing game, but contact tracing, part of the byproduct of contact tracing is to figure out where did a known case meet this new case, where did the index case meet this new. And that's the setting in which this happened. And so they collect this at the BCCDC. They won't collect this for all cases. And unfortunately, the graph gives no indication about the share of cases for which this actually was collected. But for the ones where it was successfully linked, they would then categorize those into, for example, school or daycare setting, into work setting, and into a variety of different ways, long-term care home.
Social settings.
That's right, household, whether it was transmitted in the household, most likely. So it would categorize these, and then this graph showed by age group where these were contracted.
What did the chart show in the most recent data? Where are the majority of cases?
So let me actually pull up that chart again so that I have it in front of me. Yeah, so most of these settings happen in a household. So most of the spread that they managed to trace happens within the household. And we should always remember when we look at graphs like this, that this is only showing the settings for cases where they could actually determine it. So that means that there's probably a lot of cases where they don't. Household is, of course, one where it's fairly easy to determine. If there's a COVID case and somebody else in the household had COVID, they're pretty confident that that was probably how this was transmitted.
So might be a bit overrepresented.
Probably is. Yeah, I would say it's overrepresented. It's probably a good guess. And then if you're looking at other cases, sort of the there's one that they call other settings, which is sort of a catch-all for all kinds of cases. They have about a little over half as many as households are just catch-all where they didn't break it out. There's one that's called unnamed setting, which is not really clear what that means. I've heard different interpretations about this. It might just be that sometimes when there's close contacts that meet regularly in different settings, it's not really clear which one you would attribute it to. So I think this is probably what the unnamed setting means. But we also get workplace transmissions, of course, and school and daycare, which is something that has received a lot of attention. And so it shows here that there are about 149 transmissions that they managed to trace back to school or daycare.
A lot of this, to me, comes down to trust. I mean, we generally trust our health authorities to be managing the best, but if you can't actually see the data or get basic questions answered, such as what is the unnamed or other settings on this, it's really hard to make conclusions or to say, you know, well, are schools safe to be open? Are restaurants safe to be open? And those are policy and politics issues, not just health ones.
That's right. So for one, of course, from a graph like this, we can't really say our schools or daycare is safe, right? So we'd have to consider if the kids weren't at school, they'd be somewhere else doing other things. There'll also be transmissions. And one would have to try and really dig deeper and understand the data much better to make that estimate whether this is actually making things worse or not. And this is our decision. But the point you raise about transparency, I think, is really quite important here. So there seems to be a difference between how you describe the role of transparency in a pandemic, and I would very much agree with that, which is providing transparency is a very important part of the communication that is needed to have a sustained long-term response that the public backs and supports. Whereas the BCCDC seems to say transparency is not that important. What's more important is maximal privacy. The less information we share, the harder it is to make any inferences about any individual that might be represented in that data.
And of course, just for their side, some of the issues with, for instance, small enough city-by-city data, they originally said that was because of worrying about stigmatizing particular areas or perhaps having people try to guess who in their small town had the disease.
Yeah, although on the other hand, what we've seen is that, say, in the school settings, the parent rumor mill will dig up this information anyway. So in many cases, the stigmatization that also happens, especially happens when there's little information and people make wild guesses. I'm not sure if this is an effective way to address these problems. I think having clearer data and communication is important, and the stigmatization, all the examples that BCCDC has pointed to, they happened during the time when they withheld a lot of this information. And I think other techniques and strategies have to be employed to address these very real problems. Withholding data is not necessarily a productive strategy in this setting.
Luckily, we have some very smart 10-year-olds willing to work for ice cream.
That helps to scrape out some of this data, but I think the problem is really much larger. Like I said, the occupation data that's not even shared with the Public Health Agency of Canada, that's a problem. Data on symptoms is not shared either. So if we wanted to, on a national level, try to understand what kind of symptoms are in some way are related to COVID diagnosis or testing them, we can't really do this again on a national level because this data is not provided by provinces. Some provinces do, others don't.
I think our listeners would also be very interested in places where lots of data released, like Toronto. There, similar to BC, there was a huge spike in certain neighborhoods around just before Halloween. that was kind of had been growing for quite some time. And in fact, when they broke it down by occupational data and income, that in fact it was people who were going to work because they were working minimum wage or factory or meatpacking kind of jobs. But in fact, it was being portrayed as being these large, giant weddings and banquets with a kind of implicit ethnic overtone to it. Similar in Surrey, you can't say that the downtown east side has necessarily been rife with social parties and weddings in the same period that Surrey has.
That's right. And in Surrey too, we, for example, if we're looking at Fraser South as a region, we don't really know why cases go up there. For example, another part is that we've seen there's still a lot of cross-border traffic and quite a bit of it without the bypassing the quarantine requirements. They're exempt from them. And Fraser South is not just because it's close to the border, but it does, a bulk of that traffic comes and goes to from that region. So again, has this dramatic rise in Fraser South, how much has been driven by this? We don't know. So there are many questions asked when we don't make this information available. But as you point to Toronto, a big difference there too is that early on when they started to do this local analysis and they had suspicions about ethnicity, for example, or income, they said, okay, we see these are generally low-income areas, but is it just the low-income people in this area, or is it something else that's driving us? To really get to the bottom of this, we need to collect individual-level data on income and on ethnicity. So that's what they did. So very early on, Toronto went in and changed their data collection to collect the data to have a clearer picture so that they can respond properly. And we don't do this yet.
Even with race-based data or ethnicity?
Yeah, so now ethnicity is part of the federal case report form. But this was also asked to for the independently that people asked or pushed the BCCDC to collect this information. And we've repeatedly heard from the BCCDC that this wasn't a priority given the resources that they have right now and that they weren't going to collect it. So I also assume they won't comply with the federal case report form expectations on this part either.
Well, it's all very interesting. Thank you so much for your work on this and for helping fill in a lot of the gaps that have left many of us guessing with whatever tools you have. Thank you.
That is my pleasure. And 10-year-old is happy to do that too.
Yeah, he is a great, great service to us all. Thank you for your time, Jens.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. And that was Jens von Bergmann, a mathematician, former professor at University of Calgary and University of Notre Dame, and data analyst with mountainmath.ca.
And that's our program for CFRO, The Pulse.
Your independent news show, reporting on the front lines in our community.
Every weekday, 7 a.m., here on Vancouver Co-op Radio.
Find our previous podcasts and interviews at thepulse.coopradio.org.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.